Welcome to the Geek Girl Web Show. This is tech meets creativity, entrepreneurship, and passion. We break down the barriers to learning and self-development. My name is Rebecca Garcia. I'm a self-taught developer, speaker, and STEM education advocate. My purpose is to empower people through technology. This is Life as Version Control. In this first episode with Cassidy Williams-Song, who leads developer voice programs at Amazon, we talk about getting your first internship or gig, putting yourself out there, that public speaking isn't just for extroverts, why rejection matters more than acceptance, and what you can do to develop your technical skills. This episode is brought to you by Dice.com, which helps you find tech opportunities around the world. Whether you're a software engineer, project manager, or mobile app developer, they have this really great iOS and Android mobile app, which will even show you market value. So it takes in consideration your experience, your skills, your job title, and tells you how much you should be making and which skills will help you earn the most. So you can upload your resume on the go or on Dice.com, search for different positions all around the world, and see what's out there for you. I am super excited to welcome my guest, Cassidy Williams-Song, who I've known for quite some time and I've been internet fangirling over. Cassidy currently works at Amazon and leads the developer voice programs. And so she has been also in a range of different roles from developer, evangelist, software engineer, and has worked at a handful of places. And I'm super excited to have her here on the show. Cassidy, welcome. I'm super excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun.
Awesome. So why don't you share with everyone, what is some of the stuff that you're working on right now and what you're passionate about?
Sure. So, oh man, so many different things now. So currently I'm at Amazon, like you said, and I'm leading up developer voice programs here. So it's kind of the person in between third-party developers and Amazon product teams and kind of helping guide where the SDK goes and building like demos here and there, still going to hackathons and stuff. So kind of developer evangelism, kind of software developer, kind of TPM in a way. But yeah, that's what I'm doing at work, which is pretty fun. And then outside of work, I have been on a hobby, how do you even say it?
Bonanza? Marathon?
Yeah, exactly. So I just released a mechanical keyboard I designed based on Scrabble, which I'm really excited about. I've been kind of tweeting nonstop about it. And I've also been joining a few different orchestras and groups here. I finally just got a euphonium. It's like a mini tuba. That's how I've been easily describing it to people. And I'm really excited to start learning that.
That's awesome.
And I'm in like an electric guitar band. And I'm also in the Seattle Video Game Orchestra. So we play like Zelda and Mario music and stuff at conventions and conferences and stuff, which is fun. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing outside of work. I'm also trying to experiment more with the electrical engineering side. I've never had a lot of practice with that. And, you know, practicing coding here and there. I've been dabbling with a lot of stuff lately.
That's awesome. I think you're the only other person who I can't keep up with. Who's keeping up with doing so many amazing things. I saw the Scrabble keyboard and it looks amazing. I'm super excited. That's such a cool thing that you've been working on. I mean, I guess in general, like I know that you've been a mechanical keyboard enthusiast and you got me into buying one basically because I was like, all these keyboards look so cool and I want to design my own. And so I kind of dug around and, you know, I've been keeping an eye on some of yours and they look really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, that one, I had had a dream and this shows how much I need to probably back off mechanical keyboards, but I had a dream that I could type on just like a Scrabble playing board once. And I don't know, I woke up and I was just like, that actually could make sense if that were a keyboard and I wasn't just like tapping on a board game. And so there's this one website called Keyboard Layout Editor, and it just lets you kind of rearrange your keycaps in ways and kind of lets you experiment with that. And so I decided to use that tool to design a Scrabble keyboard. And so, you know, got all of the letters to have the scores on them and then had all the different compatibility keycaps for different shapes of keyboards and stuff. And yeah, I was really excited about it, but I had no idea where to go from there because I knew that I couldn't just sell it because I don't own Scrabble. And so I just started cold calling. I reached out on Facebook and on LinkedIn and all over the place just trying to find someone who would kind of hear me out on the idea. And I went to a mechanical keyboard meetup last summer because they have those. They're very nerdy, but they're great. And I ran into some people at Mastrop, and Mastrop is where I'm actually selling a keyboard now. And they do group buys where for very niche communities, sometimes when you want something to exist, you need multiple people to buy in on it. So that way a manufacturer is just like, okay, fine, we'll make it. And so I had showed Mastrop my designs and they said, okay, well, if you can get this licensed, I don't know if you can, but if you can, we'll help make it happen. And yeah, basically someone finally replied to me and turned out he was an account exec and he went back and forth with me a few times and we finally got a contract going and I got Mastrop in on it and Mastrop has helped me go all the way through the product development lifecycle of actually getting keycap samples, getting like different color samples and chips and kind of refining the design and 3D modeling the keycaps, all kinds of stuff. It's been great. So yeah, that's kind of how it came to be. And now it's just getting a bunch of people to get in on it so we can manufacture a ton, which is exciting.
That is super exciting. And I'm kind of curious, how big is your keyboard / keycap collection?
Oh man. So to put it in a picture, I ended up buying a trunk recently so that way I could put everything somewhere because it was all over my house and it's my designated keyboard trunk. I think I have at least 6 or 7 keyboards. I tend to like buy and trade and sell a lot, but my main ones, I think I have 6, maybe 7. Actually, I might have 8. I have several. So probably a little too much, but they kind of all serve different purposes and they're all different levels of me designing them or laser cutting them or just customizing the keycaps or soldering and all kinds of stuff. It's been fun.
That's really cool. I feel like mechanical keyboards and custom keycaps are like the next level of super geeky Lego blocks for like programmers.
It's like functional Legos that you use every day. It's awesome.
Definitely. Cool. So I wanted to kind of backtrack a little bit and maybe kind of go in reverse chronological order. So I know some people have heard of developer evangelism, or, you know, I often joke that when I was a developer evangelist as well, I would have to start off and say, you know, I'm a developer evangelist. And no, my parents thought that it was something like, it's not religious, it's evangelism in the sense of evangelizing a product or a service and, you know, really speaking to technical audiences. And the way that I described it to people was 50% of my time was coding and, you know, really being involved with the product or service. And then the other 50% of my time was education. And so workshops and hackathons. And, you know, how did you end up getting into developer evangelism? I feel like a handful of people that I know kind of stumbled into it.
Yeah. And honestly, I kind of stumbled into it too. Back in my senior year of college, when I was starting to apply to jobs, I was just applying to a bunch of software engineering roles because that's what you do. And I had been speaking a lot the previous summer, my internship, and been going to a bunch of hackathons, and I'd been speaking to like my computer science club and stuff. And I was really enjoying the speaking aspect, but I had no idea how I could incorporate that into a job. And so I just started telling companies, hey, I really like coding, but I have other skills. What can I do to use those? And eventually I ended up talking to a mentor of mine and she connected me with Rob Spector, who was at Twilio at the time, who is developer evangelist extraordinaire. Anybody in the dev evangelism world, I feel like, knows Rob Spector. And he just started telling me about the role developer evangelism and what you can do with it and all of the opportunities in it. And yeah, that kind of just got me hooked. And I started looking into developer evangelism jobs. And I realized, wow, I could go to hackathons for my job. And just was really excited about that. And so I ended up talking to like Intel on their developer evangelism side and then Venmo, which is where I ended up going. And it was just so exciting to be able to apply for roles that kind of got to use my various skills, not just my technical ones, while still being pretty technical. And yeah, that's kind of how I got into it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's very similar. It's actually somebody had sent me a role and I don't remember if I had also spoken to Rob Spector and I, you know, I had spoken to John Gottfried and very similarly, they were kind of like, maybe this is something that you would enjoy. And, you know, I think there's also this misconception. I feel like people talk a lot about public speaking and I think some people have a fear of like, oh, well, I'm introverted, you know, like public speaking is this big kind of scary thing. And I like to tell people, you know, that I'm actually an introvert by default. And I just do love people. I don't know what the term is, you know, where it's like, I need my own alone time, but I also like talking to people. How did you end up getting into public speaking? Did you also start at like meetups or conferences and then kind of branch out from there?
So I'm like you. My friends call me an outgoing introvert, where I'm definitely inclined towards being alone at home a lot or just with a couple close friends. But with public speaking, I first really got into it just in school speaking to my clubs. I was the president of Computer Science Club, and so there was a lot of talking there. And then I got involved in our Women in Science and Engineering group, and I got to speak to some high schoolers there. And it just kind of started to snowball, where because I was speaking at that, I ended up getting invited to a local conference. And then because I was at that, I ended up getting invited to a larger conference. And then it just kind of kept growing and growing. And I went to school in Iowa. And so there are not a lot of tech conferences and meetups out there. And so it was definitely like slow at first. But then after graduation, when I ended up moving to New York City, that's when it really just started to grow. And I was speaking almost a little too much. That's one thing that I always tell people, don't burn out. It's so easy to burn out when you're speaking because it's so easy to say yes to so many things. And there is one stint where I was speaking for 14 days in a row at events, and that was a bad choice. I shouldn't have done that. Yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. But what I like about it is you can kind of speak about what you know, but you don't necessarily have to, like, I don't want to say engage, because you are engaging with the audience. It's not like small talk. I think for a lot of introverts, like, it's the small talk with a lot of people that is kind of just like, oh, this is such a chore. But when I'm giving a talk, I can kind of go to any audience and speak to them, talk about this kind of technical knowledge. And then when they come up to me and talk to me afterwards, that's just kind of refining what I told them or pointing them to different areas of technical know-how, or if I'm talking about women in tech or career things, kind of sticking to the topic. And then that's it. I think public speaking is great for introverts because it kind of gets you out there and talking to people, but you don't necessarily have to show all of your cards. And yeah, I think it's a good thing for introverts.
No, definitely. You know, that just reminded me is, I think it's a small talk piece that you mentioned. So I hate small talking before I speak at events, partially because we might end up talking about what I'm about to present anyway. And I like, don't want to repeat myself. But at the same time, I feel like it does definitely take a little bit of energy away versus when I'm speaking to a larger group or an audience, I feel really energized because, and afterward, I feel like I gave so many more people value than just like doing a one-off conversation with somebody and small talking for 5-10 minutes versus, I don't know, even like a lightning presentation. Yeah, that's really interesting.
I completely agree with that. I even prefer just public speaking to a really large group of strangers rather than just like a handful of people I know, just because I feel like when you do it that way, you don't have to deal with, yeah, like the intimate small talk stuff that takes away from the content and everything. Yeah, I really like public speaking. I think it's fun.
Cool. So I want to talk about one of, I guess, your most popular open source contributions. You're getting a gig repo. And, you know, I reference it a lot to a lot of women in tech and people who are younger, who might be studying computer science, computer engineering, anybody who's really interested in getting into technology. And I feel like it's a really, really valuable resource. And especially because I feel like, you know, I myself, I kind of just learned by trial by fire. I didn't study computer science in school. And I would say a lot of the quote unquote professional development or job seeking resources in college are very much like, okay, you know, here's your Times New Roman resume, go to a job fair, you know, print out your resume and give it to a bunch of people. And then hopefully somebody will call you back up or email you and give you a job. And in reality, that's not necessarily how the tech industry works, both for internships or even for full-time positions. And I worked briefly at Squarespace, where I was managing the internship campaign for both engineering and design. And, you know, what I found out on the hiring side is all of the really great candidates who are looking for summer internships, they had to have applied much earlier on and interviewed much earlier on. And, you know, the year before, you know, maybe even several semesters before, they've already accepted offers, they're comparing them. and it's a very competitive process, and there's a lot of people. And I also found that a lot of the really great candidates, people who were like, hey, this is really what I want to do, I'm showing initiative, were at hackathons. And I'd love to know, you know, just a touch a little bit on your experience. You know, you interned at a lot of places. What did that process look like for you? You know, how did you sort of decide what to apply for, and how did you focus that internship search?
Sure. So going into college and going into tech in general, I kind of was going in blind. I knew nobody else in tech. I didn't actually know that women in tech was an issue until I showed up to one of my classes. I was like, huh, I'm the only girl here. And then like the teacher pointed it out saying, as you can see, we have a girl this year. I was like, well, there's that. So that being said, because I was going in blind and didn't know anything, getting my first internship, that was truly just me listening to my college advisor. And she just said, honestly, you probably won't get one, but apply anyway. Just bring your resume to the career fair and just give it to absolutely everyone. Because if you can get anything, that's something on your resume. And I was like, okay, well, I'll try. I probably won't get anything. And I think because I was so like naive and just kind of assuming I wouldn't get anything that was perceived as confidence, when I was just like, oh, here's my resume. Yeah, I'm awesome. But I know you probably won't hire me, so I'll go to the next booth now. So I think that definitely helps me get my first internship, just being perceived as confident in my skills, because I was just kind of selling with no intent of any return. But after getting my first internship, which is at General Mills, which was super fun, lots of free food, I loved it, I got to be a little bit more focused because I started to realize this is what companies are looking for and that sort of thing. And I ended up going to Microsoft my next summer, and getting that one, that was just going through similar channels. At my school, we had, again, a big career fair and everything, but I ended up talking to the recruiter at the fair and then on the phone again, and just kind of asked a ton of questions. And that really helped not only kind of show that I like asking questions, I'm curious and all kinds of stuff, inquisitive, which recruiters like, but it showed interest too. And the recruiter was just, he kept bringing up saying, wow, a lot of people don't usually ask as many questions. This is good to know. And he said that that was the main thing that kind of pushed me to the next round of applying for internships there. And then for my last internship, that one I ended up interviewing at the Grace Hopper Conference for Women in Computing. It was my junior year. And so I was just like, okay, this will be my last internship. Let's just apply everywhere again and we'll see what we can get. And I ended up applying and accepting the offer at Intuit at the fair, at the career fair there at Grace Hopper. And yeah, I was really excited about it because it was kind of a mid-level size company. It wasn't as large as Microsoft, but it was still a tech company and it was in Silicon Valley. And I just thought it would be good to have kind of a more specialized tech internship. And I also really liked the idea of going to Silicon Valley, at least for summer, to see if I'd like it, but also just to kind of network my butt off. And yeah, that summer, I still kind of nickname it as my summer of networking because I went to a meetup at least every other day. I was filling up my LinkedIn left and right, just trying to meet as many people as I could. And I think the networking aspect was definitely the key to getting the full-time job offers that I could get just from talking to a ton of people about it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think networking is definitely a huge part of it. And I feel like for a lot of people, it can feel like a buzzword. But what I think it really means is, you know, going out and not only like being like, hey, do you want to hire me? Are you hiring? But, you know, meeting other peers and people who are, you know, might be looking for similar roles. And if something's not a fit for them, they might recommend it to you. And I also think of networking as like a boomerang where it's like, it might not pay off right away, but later on, it could. And I feel like that's how, if anything, I've also found mentors, is not necessarily at networking events, but eventually like reaching out to people who I thought were really interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, they're just like, so how do I find a mentor? And I have to tell them, it's not like some grand proposal where you're just like, will you be my mentor?
Exactly.
Like, it's really just like building that relationship, kind of like you said. The mentors that I have today are mostly just women that I've emailed after a meetup or something. And I've said, hey, it was really nice talking to you. And if you'd like to grab coffee sometime, I'd love to take you. And sometimes it's much later just saying, hey, I know that we haven't talked much, but I'm in this situation. I want to ask for a raise and I'm not entirely sure how to go about it. Would you mind giving me some advice? And just kind of building the relationship here and there, asking how they're doing. It's a two-way street because you never know when you can help them in the future. And I think that just those kinds of casual meetups where I've met someone, kept their email, and just happened to follow up later. Some of those are some of the strongest relationships I've had with mentors. And so I guess the lesson there is always follow up and keep building those relationships.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one thing that I've learned being on the other end of things is when people reach out, I don't want it to just be like, hey, can I pick your brain? It's like, what's your specific thing that I can help you with? Like you said, is it, you know, like, hey, I'm going for a new job and I want to negotiate my salary, or I can't decide between developer evangelism and, you know, just being a software engineer. And, you know, I think that that's where mentorship is really the most valuable.
Absolutely. Whenever I get emails saying, I'd like to pick your brain, or, hey, let's grab coffee sometime, I want to hear about your job, I'm like, no, do I have to? But if there's like very actionable advice, and also if there's an option for us to not do coffee, like, I'm happy to do coffee, but I can't always do that and schedules get crazy. If you give me the option to just answer your questions in the email, that's so great. I always answer those emails.
Yeah, if it's something that you can answer in an email, but also I feel like people should also never take it personally. I mean, it only happens every once in a while, but like, yeah, I had it at one point where I was meeting with like 3 women a week for coffee while I had a 9-to-5 job. And I was like, this is not sustainable. I really want to help you all, but I don't think I can keep re-answering the same questions. And I feel like that's where a lot of resources and things were born. Like, you're getting a gig. I'm sure those were a lot of the common questions that you had as well.
Yeah, I truly wrote that guide because I was answering the same questions over and over and over again. And I mean, it was supposed to be a resource for people, but it was also a time saver for me. So that way I could just say, hey, look at this link. Hope that helps you, and kind of move on.
Yeah, definitely. So kind of jumping into sort of skills development, I know that you launched an online JavaScript course. Can you tell me a bit more about that and who it's geared towards and who can really get the most out of it?
Sure. So this JavaScript course, I was really excited to start that. I had toyed with the idea of it because I'd done very beginner HTML and CSS classes. I've done a lot of workshops for basic JavaScript, but I hadn't really gone beyond that level before. And I thought it would be valuable not only for other people, but also for me to just kind of really solidify my knowledge and kind of learn by teaching. And so this JavaScript course is for people who kind of know their JavaScript already. Like, I definitely go in expecting you to know how to write a function, if statements and loops, and know the basics of HTML and CSS. And it goes into really what's happening under the hood. So like, what is the DOM and how does it work? How do events and callbacks work in the browser and what's actually happening there? What is ES6? Because everybody's talking about it with arrow functions and stuff, but I don't fully understand it. Kind of going into that, calling APIs, and then it goes into the more less theoretical and more into the practical of building tools like Grunt and Gulp and Webpack and how to use NPM and Yarn. And then it moves on into React. And it takes a lot of the concepts that we cover in the first part of the course with the theory and applies it to React. And that kind of eases you in, where because I talked about the DOM, now you can understand the virtual DOM and React and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, it's definitely more intermediate developers. Like, my sister's manager is taking my class. So it's not for the very, very beginners, but I think it's a valuable resource for anyone who just wants to really get to know JavaScript well.
That's awesome. And going off of that, what would you recommend to people who want to deepen their skills? So I often hear people are like, oh, well, I ran through a bunch of these exercises online, or I did this course. And usually a lot of those courses or exercises, I think, are great for foundational knowledge of, like you said, like, what are loops and what are arrays? But they don't go into more of the practical knowledge that you really get from projects or working with other people. And I think that that's also a component of, you know, what helps people stand out, whether that's getting an internship or getting a job. And I always stress to people, like, you know, your projects are really valuable, even if it's your own side project and you don't think it's that important. It shows that, you know, you've done that independent thinking and you're not just running through building a tic-tac-toe game. So what would you recommend to people who are really looking to both showcase their skills and develop them past that basic HTML and CSS?
Really, it's kind of what you said, where it's building projects. And I know project ideas are kind of hard to come by and you're just like, well, I guess I'll make another to-do app or something. But having those projects and beefing up your resume and GitHub is such a big deal because more and more recruiters are looking at GitHub profiles instead of LinkedIn's just because they want to see that you're actually coding and that you actually know what you're doing. And for making those projects, one area that I often go to is it's actually on Reddit. There's a subreddit called Somebody Make This, where it's just a bunch of people who have app ideas and who have all kinds of different project ideas but don't have the ability to make them. And I definitely go there and not necessarily take the ideas because sometimes they're just kind of like, make an app that wakes me up in the morning. I'm like, that's an alarm. You have that. But it's really good for kind of getting your juices flowing and brainstorming some of those apps. A lot of times it's just come up with a problem that needs to be solved and then kind of throw some technologies on top of it and see what you can make. And I think doing those or taking common interview questions and try to build a project around those interview questions. Like one of them, for example, I have a technical newsletter with some interview questions in it, as you know. And one of the questions that I posed last night was to make some kind of data structure that handled washing machines at a laundromat. And which laundry machine should you pick? What's a data structure for keeping track of if it's in use or not and how much it costs, that sort of thing. Kind of try to come up with an everyday object and code it. Like one common interview question that I see is, what's your favorite board game? Okay, make a tool for it or make a data structure for it. And if you just recreate those kinds of common objects too, those are some really solid projects that people understand right away because they know what a phone is or what Monopoly is, but they can also see how you coded it too.
That's great. Yeah, I never thought of it that way. I hadn't heard about Somebody Make This before, so I'll definitely have to check that out. I do read it around a little bit, but I should definitely check that out too. Yeah, that's really cool. I feel like a lot of people think that they need to make an app that solves like world hunger or, you know, like, I don't know, make a startup if they start like coding some of these bigger things. And they also don't realize you can really just dig in and contribute to open source or, you know, just open source those fun projects and tools that you've made, like you mentioned, like a to-do list app and, or things like, I mean, even for myself, like one of the things that's been on my back burner to tinker around with is even building just a tea timer app that has an interface that I like, you know, for how long I want to steep my tea.
Yeah. And some of the most impressive projects I've seen have been something that seems basic, but you can tell this person really just dove deep into the knowledge of it. There is one person that I saw recently where she had made this origami folder in WebGL, and she just really liked origami and wanted to see if she could make some kind of 3D thing that visualized origami. And she ended up taking it a step further and started to learn about like the pressure curves on the different papers as you folded a certain amount of time. And she had all of these data visualizations around that. And she just dove really, really deep into it and just got complex. And I think that those things are cool where you just kind of start with a basic idea and just really flesh it out to the nth degree. And that just looks really cool too.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm curious, what's your opinion on, so I recently was helping facilitate a Women in Product event. And one of the topics that we were having a group discussion on was confidence, but confidence in relation to public speaking. But I think that it even goes deeper into confidence and dealing with rejection, even through like the job seeking process. And what has that been like for you? So I like to tell people like, hey, you know, if you're just starting out, unfortunately, like the best way to get experience in interviewing is like first focusing on quantity instead of quality, just so you can kind of get a feel for the application process and the interview process. And, you know, it's going to suck. You're going to go through some rejection there, but it's quote unquote, like one of the best teachers. So I'm curious what your opinion and recommendations are on confidence and rejection.
I totally agree with you there on just quantity. When I was in my senior year, I applied to so many jobs and I kind of just wanted to get it done so that I wouldn't have to deal with it for the rest of the semester and could just kind of relax for my senior year, relatively speaking. And I think I applied for dozens of jobs. I applied for at least 50. And a lot of people, they are kind of just like, wow, Cassidy, you had 10 job offers in college. That's insane. But I keep telling them, you don't understand the ratio of rejection to acceptance that I had there. And really, I think that's really true, where when you get rejected, it's great to be able to ask why. And a lot of companies, they're very willing to say like, okay, well, here are the things where you messed up, and they tell you to practice this or to refine your knowledge on this or answer your questions better this way. And that practice really, really helps. I think those kinds of interviews have helped me more than the acceptance ones, because those ones are the ones that I study afterwards, because I realize, okay, if I want to do better on it next time, this is what I have to fix. Meanwhile, if I get accepted, then I'm just like, oh, cool, I don't have to work on this anymore. So yeah, I definitely agree with you there on the quantity aspect and just getting rejected. But at the same time, rejection does hurt. And so in terms of confidence there, it is definitely hard to maintain it if you're getting rejected a lot. But I think at that point, that's where you can kind of turn to your communities and try to build your community around you too, because everybody gets rejected and everybody has been at that point where you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be unemployed forever. And I think just turning to your community and asking for advice, continue refining your resume, and just kind of don't let it get you down, because you're still starting out or you're still working on your interviewing skills. Some of the best developers I know are terrible interviewers, and it took them a long time to get a role, even though they're such great coders because of that. And so don't let an interview determine your self-worth. Just let it be a learning experience for you and you'll get something.
Yeah, for sure. I can definitely relate to that. And I know myself, I'm personally not very good at technical interview questions in the sense of like brain teaser and puzzle type stuff. And I honestly wonder if that's why I moved into product management, is I'm like, no, but I want to think about the bigger strategy. I'm not that great of a programmer, but maybe that's my own inner confidence I need to work on. But I 100% agree. I think that using your rejections as stepping stones and seeing them as helping you on your way to improving your skills is super important. You know, and I think one of the things that came out of that women in product discussion that we had had was also sometimes confidence, it's not even just saying to yourself, oh, you know, I'm really great at this, I'm going to be confident at that. Sometimes you're just worried about so many external factors. I know for me, when we were talking about public speaking, I'm worried about, is the audience going to be engaged enough? Am I saying the right things? You know, like, am I going to seem knowledgeable? And, you know, really, there are only so many variables that you can control about yourself. Like, and it's kind of come to this thing where I've been like, well, I can only make a certain amount of people happy. But, you know, if I'm delivering something authentic and something that I found helpful and meaningful that I think other people will, then, you know, I think it's valuable. And I feel like a lot of people struggle with that confidence in the sense of, is what I'm doing valuable? You know, am I valuable? Are my skills, you know, valuable? And yeah, it's more than just saying, I think, fake it till you make it.
Right. Oh, totally. And also, I think some people want to be awesome right out of the gate. And it takes practice. It's like everything in life where, let's just say you started playing chess and you really want to be really good at chess. You're not going to be up there with the professional players right away. It takes baby steps of losing games and learning your mistakes and continuing to improve in that sense. And I think interviewing is the exact same way.
Yeah, for sure. I think, I can't remember, there was like, I don't remember, it was an article or a discussion that somebody had that with the rise of GitHub and open source being more prevalent, because I remember back in the day, source code was in a zip file that you had to like download, you know, to like install software or something. So you weren't really judging somebody's code as much, because it wasn't like I could click through, at least in the beginning, like I don't remember fully clicking through into every single like repository and looking at individual lines of code. But somebody had mentioned that open source, it almost puts you on the spotlight, I feel like, because people can look at my exact lines of code. And I think it makes people a little bit more self-conscious versus if you started coding at a younger age, you know, maybe you didn't have as much of that fear of like, oh, everybody can see my code, you know, and kind of feeling like it's never ready.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's definitely an element of putting yourself out there when your code is there and you're just like, man, I hope people like it. And then you go back to your code like 6 months later and you're just like, wow, that was trash. But it's a good sign that you're growing as long as you're continuing to code and continuing to put yourself out there. It's kind of like, well, you know this, building a personal brand is so huge, and having the code out there and showing that you're continuously improving and really just having a professional presence out there, whether it be on Twitter or on LinkedIn or other mediums, I think that is so huge and really a part of getting these jobs and roles and showing your whole self, not just your code. But I think that's a huge aspect of getting your foot in the door as well.
Yeah, definitely. Personal brand is really huge. I feel like that was really eye-opening for me as an introvert. It's like, oh, I have all of these other things that are not necessarily related to tech that I can showcase. Like, oh, I like yoga and mindfulness and, you know, things that you wouldn't normally talk about when you're talking about programming. But I feel like both in seeing other people's personal brands like yourself, where it's like mechanical keyboards and music, like I think that's really awesome, is to kind of give more depth instead of, I feel like a lot of people are worried that their professional presence online has to be like, I am XYZ, you know, software developer, and I XYZ am looking for this role, and like, period. I feel like people are a little afraid in some ways, or they're like, oh, well, I don't know what I'm going to talk about on social media. And so some people like shy away from it.
Well, and a lot of people that I've talked to, they've said, well, what's the point of me tweeting a lot? It's not like I have followers. I'm like, well, you don't have followers because you don't tweet a lot. It's not a problem. You just got to tweet and people will come. And also, I think there's an element of bringing your whole self, kind of like what you were saying, don't be so cut and dry. I was on a panel discussion at Grace Hopper this past fall, and we were talking about how if you bring your whole self to a workplace, whether you're a mom or one of the panelists, she writes professional opera reviews on the side. If you bring in all of these different hobbies that you really like to the workplace, that kind of brings a satisfaction not only to yourself because you don't feel like you're hiding this aspect of yourself, but it kind of introduces to employers and prospective employers and current employers that this is who you are and your work isn't your life. And because this is what is important to you, they can't expect you to not be passionate about that or to put that on the side for your job because this is who you are. And I think that it's really important to be able to show that everywhere, whether it be online, in the workplace, all over the place.
Yeah, for sure. I feel also people might be afraid because they're like, oh, well, maybe they won't think I'm taking my job seriously. And I had something like that happen in a previous job where it was like, I had dual monitors and I had Twitter up on one screen, but I was coding on the other screen. And I think somebody who wasn't technical, like, complained to my manager or something and said like, oh, she's tweeting or something like that. And it's like, I'm getting my work done. And my manager spoke to me and was like, well, I don't care. You're getting your work done. It doesn't bother me. And so I'm kind of sitting here having the last laugh being like, haha, I'm verified on Twitter. Suck it.
Exactly. Oh, that's funny.
Anyway, so, you know, I want to talk a little bit about Grace Hopper. So I know we reference it a lot, Grace Hopper, GHC. So for anybody who isn't familiar, it's one of the largest conferences for, as they call it, women in computing. And, you know, that goes across the spectrum. So not just people who are studying computer science or computer engineering, there are also discussions and panels on product management, on design. You know, I think it's a really awesome event. And, you know, especially for students, there are scholarships and ways to get there. And it's really great, especially for, as you mentioned, Cassidy, in your past, like you were the only girl in your computer science class or only woman. And I think for some women, when you finally go there, and, you know, I know that people tweet about this every year, they're like, there's a line for the women's bathroom. And it's one of the first events that they've been to where that's been their experience. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about, you know, what you'd recommend to both students and job seekers, you know, how to get the most out of Grace Hopper. You know, I myself have gone there and interviewed, like you said, and I know there's also a big line at the FedEx, Kinko's, you know, copying place for your resume, and people don't anticipate that they need, you know, 50 copies of their resume because there's so many companies there, and it's such a great opportunity to not only apply for job opportunities, but also meet other women and hear from these expert women on panels and talks. So what would you recommend for people attending Grace Hopper?
Oh man. So Grace Hopper, you have to go in with strategy. You have to be ready for that thing. And so I didn't know this the first year, but man, every year since I have been ready. When you go to Grace Hopper, first of all, bring 100 copies of your resume, not just 50, because some companies take two, some companies like to mark it up and then take another one. Just bring a ton. And sometimes you're not even at the career fair and you end up just giving your resume to someone at lunch or something. People are just, well, not giving away jobs, but they're ready to offer jobs to pretty much anybody coming by their booths. Like, companies are there to recruit. Even this past year, I was not job seeking and I got multiple interviews just because I could. And I was just like, well, this will be good practice at least. And yeah, Grace Hopper, you have to be strategic. Be ready to just plan when your interviews are going to be. Fill in the time slots whenever there's not a talk that you want to go to. And just kind of be ready to be on a lot. It's exhausting. And especially as more of an introverted person, you have to be ready for your sales pitch and just say, okay, here's my 30-second spiel about me. I know there's literally thousands of women behind me who are also interested in talking to you. And also, definitely don't get too caught up by the really big booths. Booths like Microsoft and Amazon and Facebook and Instagram, those kind of really big companies, they will always have such a large line. But there are so many smaller companies and startups and just like more specialized companies that are hiring out the wazoo. You just kind of approach those, kind of go for quantity, like we were saying earlier. Go for the small companies, get those, and then go for the big companies after that, because they kind of are just taking in an ocean of resumes, and you just want to get to the ones that you will get interviews with right away. And a lot of these companies, when you talk to them, you can ask them if they're holding any events. So many times, like I remember when I was in school, I would talk to Yahoo, let's just say, and I'd say, oh, and are you having any events during a conference? And they'll say, well, actually, we have a private brunch. Here, I'll give you an invitation. And all of these companies will have a happy hour or a breakfast or a lunch or a dinner or this or that, a karaoke night even for people who are interviewing with them. And so if you ask about that, chances are there will be some kind of invitation that you can get to go to their party and then talk to them a little bit more one-on-one or specifically to an engineer on the team or a recruiter. I know one girl where she did that at a company, and then at the happy hour, she ended up talking to the director of engineering at a company, and she ended up technical interviewing on the spot just at a table with him. He just asked her a few questions about her projects and she got an offer at that dinner. So it's definitely like important to kind of ask those questions and also just really have fun and get to know some of the girls around you. And there's some men there, but this is going to be the one chance every year where you will be just surrounded by women in tech. One of my favorite things at the conference is not actually the networking at all, but at the very end, they always have a big dance party. And it's spectacular where you are just surrounded by women like you who are like nerdy, but just dancing and having a great time. And this past year, like Telly Whitney, who founded the conference, she's in her 70s. She was just dancing to Ariana Grande with all of us. And it was just so fun. And it's just one of those moments where you just live in that moment and capture it, because that community is so good and so powerful. And there's so many chances to not only take advantage of it for your own jobs, but also just for your own personal lives to build a community around you and relationships that you can have for a really long time.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think it's something that young women should attend. And, you know, I myself, even this past year, I did interview as well. And I found that out of all the different booths and stuff that I talked to, the one company that did come up back around and, you know, I went for an on-site interview wasn't a big company. And they were really, really wonderful people. And I think if I had only been like looking at the big name brands, then I probably wouldn't have had that opportunity to interview with them. And yeah, I thought they were really great people. That's awesome. I also like to think that you should also plan your food around all the different after conference events, because there's so many of them. Like, you shouldn't have to go buy yourself dinner. You can just go to one of the events. They're usually free.
Yeah. You legitimately need to like have a notebook with a paper schedule so that way you can scribble things down quickly, because there's so many events all the time, but it's worth it to go to a bunch of them for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. So I know we're getting close on time. I guess I'll go with like a harder question, but this has been really fun. So I guess what would be your advice to anyone who's looking to break into tech, and, you know, especially to young women? What would be your one piece of advice?
I'm going to give a piece of advice that a mentor gave me, and it is lift as you climb. As you are getting into this tech industry and starting to kind of know more information and get new roles and then start to get promoted in those roles and switching companies and stuff, you're going to start moving up fast if you really work hard and kind of work on your network and just really go for it. And there will always be people who are a few steps behind you who are wanting to do the exact same thing. And instead of ever being competitive with them, you shouldn't be, especially among women in tech, because we need to have this community around us. Really just help them get to where you are today, whether it be making an introduction, helping review their resume, helping them practice interviewing, just directing them to resources. Doing that for people, it builds a community around you, and it's nice to just have people around you that care about you. But it also just kind of helps pay it forward, because then they start helping people too, because they're getting to where you were, and then they can help the people who are a few steps behind them. And it really kind of generates this great pay it forward sentiment of just helping people and building a community. And eventually you just get to know a lot of people because you're helping people, and people end up helping you because they want to pay it forward towards you too. And it's just an amazing two-way street that can turn into a 10-way street, because you are helping others and they end up helping you, and you can just have a community to lean back on when you need it. There have been so many times in my career where I've started to question, is programming for me? I don't know if I can handle this. And being able to talk to people who can kind of calm me down and say no to my imposter syndrome and give me advice and stuff has been a real game changer. And I really don't think I would be where I am today if it weren't for a community like that. And so really, again, lift as you climb, pay it forward, and build that community around you, because that will help you get so far in both your personal and professional life.
That's amazing. I 100% agree. I think that not only focusing on developing your skills, but yeah, giving back. And I think for me, the reason that I wanted to start this podcast was because I wanted to share amazing people and stories and answers like the ones that you've given. And I'm super excited to see how this podcast can help other people. And I see tech as not just, as they say, like every company is a tech company now, you know, oh, tech skills are important, but giving people the ability to create through technology is really important.
Yeah, it really is. And again, that community aspect, it really can save careers. It can really just save relationships. It can do so much. It is such a powerful tool in both good times and bad. And it's also just so fun to be able to share your victories with those communities too. Yeah, it's great to just build that relationship with anybody you can, because it will help you in the long run and help them too.
Awesome. So I wanted to leave listeners off with where they can find you and where they can find an awesome Scrabble mechanical keyboard keycaps. So can you tell us where everyone can find you?
Sure. Well, on Twitter, my username is Cassidoo, C-A-S-S-I-D-O-O. And you can find Cassidoo all over the place. Cassidoo is my username for GitHub and for LinkedIn, and not for Instagram. A teenager took that one from me. But yeah, Cassidoo is my main thing. And then if you want to find my Scrabble keyboard, I've been posting it all over my Twitter. Look there. That's where it is. And I also have a newsletter on Tiny Letter. If you go to tinyletter.com/Cassidoo, basically Cassidoo anything, that'll be me. And my website is at cassidoo.co, and it has links to everything there as well.
Awesome. I have the same reasoning for why I'm at Geek Girl Web, is because my name is really common. So it was already taken in Twitter.
The struggle.
Yep. Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and being one of our first guests, and can't wait to see what other stuff you create, and stay awesome.
You too. Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Cool. Thanks, Cassidy. Take care.
I wanted to thank Dice.com for being our inaugural sponsor and helping support our mission of empowering people through technology. So if you are looking to get to the next level in your career, are looking to enter tech, see what skills you should develop, definitely check out Dice.com and see what careers are out there. Thank you so much for listening to the first episode of the Geek Girl Web Show. If you liked this and want to hear more, please subscribe to us on iTunes and give us a rating. Your feedback is really helpful. And if you want to stay in touch, definitely follow and tweet me at Geek Girl Web. And I appreciate any comments and feedback with #GeekGirlWeb. Thanks for listening.